Andrew Sharp joins the show today to discuss the next five teams on my entertainment rankings, the Blazers, Jazz, Raptors, Wizards, and Mavericks. We also talk about Klay Thompson leaving Dallas, heading to Miami, as well as a little bit more on DeMar DeRozan signing with the Denver Nuggets. That's all coming up right now with me and Andrew Sharp. All right, now joining me to talk about some NBA from the GOAT NBA podcast from Stratechery, it's Andrew Sharp. Andrew, what up?
What's up, man? Great to be here. Just closing out August with you. It's a great honor for me.
I appreciate you coming on, man. We just spent our weekend in Chicago with a little trip. We'll talk about Chicago later, but we're going to start out with the NBA entertainment rankings, continuing with the next five teams, starting with number 19, the Portland Trailblazers. The Portland Trailblazers get rid of Tiago Splitter this offseason. The whole big controversy with Tom Dundon cheaping out on him. They end up hiring Mike Inouye to this unorthodox, non-guaranteed contract after some successful years in Minnesota for him. And they make a big acquisition. They get Ja Morant. They're the team that actually goes out and gets Ja Morant after he hit a big low in Memphis. And I think that leads to my first thought when it comes to Portland this year. How the hell is this team going to work with all of these guards? I cannot wait to watch the Blazers with Damian Lillard come back, Ja Morant resurgent, Scoot Henderson, Drew Holiday, Sharp's a guard, Denny gets touches. How is Mike Inouye going to make it work in Portland with all these guards?
I know, man. Poor Mike Inouye effectively coaching on like a 10-day contract up there in Portland, trying to make it work with this mess of a roster. So here's the thing. I actually found myself really enjoying last year's Blazers because they played really, really hard. They were great defensively. They were kind of overachieving all season long. And so they tended to be in just competitive games night in and night out. And I worry that a lot of the soul of last year's team is just going to get screwed up with this year's version. So I think 19th is actually the perfect spot for the Blazers in terms of entertainment value, because coming into the season, looking at what they're going to try to make work, I just think we've got the potential for some extremely weird and potentially bad vibes with this year's Blazers. So it's like, I want to keep them at arm's length as we head into the season here.
Yeah, and I think with Portland, the reason why they rank a little bit on the, like, the lower end, 19, I think they'll be entertaining, to be clear. They're a fun team to watch, but that's the funnest thing about them is, like, from a tactical standpoint, what it was last year. To your point, they're a very fun, gritty, hard-nosed team to watch.
They had an identity last year. I don't know what the identity will be this year. Like, whose team is it? Is it Ja's team? Is it Dame's team? They've got four guards for two spots. All of them are sort of point guard-ish. And then, you know, with Dame, he, because of what he means in that market, they're going to have to give him a lot of deference. I don't know what the plan is with Ja, why they brought Ja in. But the other thing that concerns me is Denny is so much better playing on the ball than he would be playing off the ball. So I don't want to take the ball out of Denny's lap because of all the commitments they've made here. Mike Inouye is probably going to have to do that. So I just don't know what the hell it will look like, which I guess is interesting, but also a little concerning.
Exactly. And I think that's when I look at this team, like, they're not quite a contender, so they don't have the highest stakes. They don't, I mean, star gravity, Dame's popular, but he's also coming off a torn Achilles, and Ja was popular. Maybe those guys can become must-watch TV again. We'll see. They don't have the brightest future necessarily either. I like some of the young guys, but nobody is like going to be a guaranteed star. And so I don't think this team is going to be horrific either. I think they're going to be a competitive team. I don't know how it's going to work. And I think with Mike Inouye, we saw him when he had opportunities as a interim or replacement head coach, if the coach got thrown out or whatever, and he was pretty good. But it's hard to tell when you're a replacement compared to being the guy. The one thing I think is so interesting from Blazers fans is they now don't seem too bent up out of shape for losing Splitter. It's just about how they lost Splitter with Dundon really lowballing him. It's just about how it happened, not about actually losing him. So I think Blazers fans seem open-minded about the idea of Mike Inouye being a coach that can be brought in and make things work here. I just think with all of these guys, like you said, with Dame, he is the face of the franchise even still after leaving. So how is it going to work with him and Ja? Like, Ja Morant is a guy who's never been successful playing off the ball. How does that work with Dame? How does that work with Denny?
Dame hasn't really. Yeah.
No, he has. Like, it never didn't work with Giannis. And then Scoot Henderson, he had 30-point games in the playoffs. He closed the year great and, like, finally started to look like he was on track. And suddenly he has Dame, old Dame, and Ja Morant ahead of him on the depth chart. So what is the focus here for Portland? I feel a lot of confusion with the state of this franchise.
Yeah, well, and I also think fans are pretty confused as well. And that's going to be part of what contributes to potentially bad vibes next season, because there's the Dundon tension and the Dundon weirdness with Splitter, the weird deal for Mike Anori. And so if they start out the year kind of flatlining after last year's momentum, that's where my guard is up for, you know, this could get more dysfunctional than it seems like it would be possible to. Like, I don't think people are bracing for how low the floor could get in Portland this year, just because of all the weirdness surrounding that franchise, the clunky fit of the roster. Mike Anori will have his work cut out for him. Let's put it that way.
You seem a little bit lower on them than I am. Like, just hearing the way you talk about the floor, they're 42-40 last year. They end up the seventh seed out of the
playing hard all year. Yep.
So you're thinking about, like, Dallas, Utah, Phoenix, like, even Golden State if Steph plays a lot of games. You're thinking about, like, maybe Portland being a team that falls out of the play-in entirely. Is that how you're thinking about their floor?
A little bit. Yeah, and the reason I'm low is because I'm low on Dame, and I'm low, like, Dame at this point in his career, what are you really going to get from him? And Ja at this point in his career, what are you getting from him? And because of the commitments made to those guys, I think that they're going to have to put the ball in their hands, and I just like the team a lot less if that's the plan. Let alone trying to play those two guys together and make that work. Like, I think that's just DOA on opening night. But even if you're splitting them up, like, what are you really getting from those guys? And how does that change the identity of the team that was pretty successful and fun last year? That's why I'm bracing for, like, a 12th place finish in the worst case scenario, as opposed to the floor being 8 or 9 or 10.
I think a big part of that will also be Donovan Clingan staying healthy. 67 games year one, 77 games year two. Hopefully after, you know, he's had a little bit of lower body issues prior in college, if he can continue to stay healthy, I think that raises their floor with his ability as a 7-footer to protect the rim, rebound, and even space the floor now. I mean, he had three three-pointers per game last year, made 34% of them. If he can be a floor spacing five, one of those rare centers that can space and protect the rim on the other end, I think that raises your floor. But big questions up and down that Portland roster, and that's why I have them 19th. I have ahead of them, with 18th on the entertainment rankings, the Utah Jazz. They're offseason. They draft Aaron Peterson with the number 2 pick. They sign my guy, Mo Bamba, as well as Jackson Hayes. They're backups to Yusuf Nurkic, who they retained. And this starting five, projected with Yusuf Nurkic at the five, Jaren Jackson Jr. and Lauri Markkanen at the forward spots, a Peterson, Keyonte George backcourt. I think this team, you look at their starting five, their depth, Ace Bailey, Bryce Sensabaugh, Isaiah Collier, Filipowski, who's had moments, Conchar, Cody Williams, Okogie. Like, there's a lot of quality rotation names, and there's a lot of quality young players that have some significant upside. And then they have proven players, Markkanen, Jackson, Nurkic, Keyonte George is a borderline all-star. The Jazz, to me, when I look at this team on paper, I think they're a sneaky playoff team.
I mean, sneaky playoff team, I think that's definitely a possibility, which is very exciting after the last several years in Utah. When you say entertainment power rankings, what exactly are we ranking? And like, what's the criteria for these teams?
So I have five categories that I graded every team on. The stakes, is this team a contender? Is that reason
do
to
they
watch
matter?
Them?
Are they
do
relevant?
They matter?
Yeah.
Yes. Star gravity. Does this team have a star that you want to tune in to watch? Like, for example, with the Warriors, Stephen Curry is still, you know, a big name player.
Sure.
Exactly. So the futures for this team, like young rosters, like the Jazz, I have them as a 9 out of 10 for future. Mm. It could become a 10 out of 10 if Peterson starts looking at like a star. The product, I think the Jazz have a fun style of play. I like their offense. I like the way they play. So they're like a 6 or 7 out of 10. Then chaos potential. Chaos potential is teams where things could get pretty ugly and entertaining to watch, you know, and like this could be
car
one of those
crashes
teams.
Are entertaining,
yes,
too. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yes.
So there's certain teams that are ranked highly, including some that we'll be talking about coming up in the rankings, where it's like, hey, this might not go poorly, and you're looking forward to seeing that Shams notification about some drama happening. The entertainment rankings is not just league pass, like X's and O's, watching a team at 7 p.m. or 10 p.m. at night. It's following the team as a whole. And so I think Utah...
Who's going to be most excited to podcast about? Okay,
yes.
That makes sense.
And I think with Utah's youth, that does bump them up quite a bit in my eyes, because it's not just Jaren Jackson Jr., what he does to their defense and how he helps them out. It's not just Lauri Markkanen continuing to tick away as a good player. It's Darren Peterson, Keyonte George. Keyonte George has gotten significantly better every year. Is this year he becomes an all-star? Darren Peterson showed star potential in summer league. Obviously, we know what he was in high school, the way his year went in Kansas. There's some chaos potential there as well with Darren Peterson. But like, how does it work with Peterson now in the NBA surrounded by all these guys? So I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to watch with the Utah Jazz this year, and a lot of storylines to follow that bumps them up a lot compared to where they've been, when they've just been a pure tanking team in recent years.
100%. Look, I am with you all the way as far as Jazz intrigue is concerned. This is a nerdy basketball opinion, but me personally, in my heart of hearts, the Jazz are probably in my top five for teams that I'm most excited to watch through the first month or two next season, just to see what it all looks like. I mean, the reason I paused when you said that they are potentially a playoff team in the West, I agree that they are potentially a playoff team. I would be more excited about what this team could do this season in Salt Lake City if they still had Walker Kessler and I didn't have to look at Yusuf Nurkic as the starting five in the roster breakdown graphic you posted a minute ago. Like, you platooning Nurkic and Jackson Hayes at the five, that does just sort of give me pause in terms of what this team is actually going to be across 82 games. How are they going to defend? Because Keyonte George isn't really a defender. Lauri Markkanen's not really a defender. Jaren Jackson Jr., he can't really play the five. Maybe they will go that direction and that's how they'll close games. What I'm excited about, though, is I like a lot of the pieces on this roster. And I also feel like Will Hardy, he's had the restrictor plate on him over the last couple of years. Like the Jazz, over the last couple of years, they've been tanking, but they've also looked pretty competent at various points for various stretches through these seasons with Will Hardy. And then they always have to just shut it all down and try to get a lottery pick. And it finally worked for them this year. And I'm really curious to see just how good and creative they can be if they're trying to compete for an entire season. Like Ace Bailey, he started to get a little bit of a rhythm late in the year last year. How much do I trust that success, though? Because none of those games really mattered for Utah, and they were getting the doors blown off them in a lot of those games. But I want to see, like, can Ace Bailey contribute to a winning team in Utah? I'm not ruling it out, you know, and he can certainly score. So watching that mix come together, watching Hardy try to get the most out of them, like, I've been excited since the night they drafted Darren Peterson to see what it looks like. And Keyonte George was awesome for long stretches of last season. So how does it look like with those two guys sharing the ball? Because I think Darren Peterson was pretty excited about the opportunity to be a point guard. Does that carry over or does he settle into a role as a shooting guard alongside Keyonte? And there's Keyonte contract intrigue as well. So again, all very nerdy. I couldn't make like a sincere case to normal people to get like really psyched about the Jazz. So I think they fail the like, does this matter test as far as the entertainment rankings. But I'm really excited, you know, and I think this could be one of the best teams in the West over the next 4 or 5 years. So in that sense, it definitely matters. Let's see what they can put together.
For sure. It's like if you're a general NBA fan or you're like a want to, an NBA team to root for, like I'm sure you've gotten questions with the GOAT over the years. I'm trying to take on an NBA team. I think the Utah Jazz are one of the teams like that would be top two, top three recommended. I'd like to take on the Utah Jazz and become a Jazz fan and invest in this team today. And eventually it'll turn into something because the Jazz have a good problem. They have too many good young players. Like there's going to be quality young players that are worthy of an investment that don't get it. I mean, Cody Williams on the depth chart graphic we have him, you know, behind Bryce Sensabaugh and Ace Bailey and Darren Peterson. There's not a lot of minutes for a guy like Cody Williams to get, even though he's still only in year three. He's shown some flashes. And I think for this team, you're going to see them probably at some point, maybe this year, maybe next summer or the following year, consolidate a bit. And I think that same thing, that note I just hit on with having too many good young players, applies to our next team in entertainment rankings. The Washington Wizards. Next team we're going to talk about here in the entertainment rankings. The Washington Wizards this offseason, they have the number one pick. They draft AJ DiBonsa. They bring in DeAndre Ayton. They bring back Chris Middleton after trading him. Reasons to watch your Washington Wizards, Mr. Andrew Sharp. What's the number one reason to watch the Washington Wizards with this weird, funky lineup of vets and young guys they have?
Well, I mean, they are my Washington Wizards. I have lived and died with this team for the better part of my life and covered them for the better part of my professional career. So it's hard to step out of that role and pitch a normal person on the Wizards because if I'm being 100%, like I personally am extremely ready to root for the first team in this decade that actually has a chance to be a winning team. It's the first year they're going to be competing in earnest for the last 3 or 4 years. I'm actually very close to pulling the trigger on season tickets for the Wizards, which would be the first season ticket package I've ever had in my life. So that's where I am emotionally on the way into this season. Like, I want to watch them actually try to be good for the first time this decade. I think there's a chance they could be good. Where I am reluctant to pitch the normal person too hard on the Wizards, like Trae Young's a tough watch. In any context, I don't really trust his ability to play off the ball. So it could just sort of turn into Trae Young on offense and kind of a mess on defense. But there are a lot of different directions this season can go in Washington. And there is a lot of talent there. Similar to the Utah conversation, like, I don't think there's enough appreciation nationally for just how aggressively the Wizards were tanking last season. Like, you could look at them. Alex Saar was on a minutes limit and was in and out of the lineup. They shut Keyshawn George down. They've got good young players. And then you also have the number one pick there. And AJ, I kind of wonder what the fit will look like next to Trae Young. AJ DiBonsa is better with the ball in his hands than playing off the ball. But there's so much size and explosion and sort of natural scorer's instincts with AJ that I think he's going to have a pretty high floor even as a rookie. So all of that contributes to the entertainment value. And this is, in terms of chaos potential, like AD and the Wizards came to an agreement where they're going to wait 20 games and evaluate one another before they decide whether to proceed with an extension. There's nothing in my mind that would be more chaotic than giving AD $270 million until he's nearly 40 years old, but that's what he's asking for. So let's see what happens. You know, a lot of different directions this could go. What do you see when you see the Wizards?
I see a team that is going both ways. There's a two timeline situation here with the Wizards because you have Anthony Davis, you have Trae Young. You bring back Chris Middleton. Like you even signed DeAndre Ayton. And he's been to a finals.
Chris Middleton, as someone who is here, I think he made a real impact as a veteran. And I'm glad they brought him back to try to sort of coach the young guys. I don't anticipate Chris Middleton playing more than like 10 to 15 minutes a game, but I'm glad he's in the mix.
And I think when you talk about that mixture of the vets with all of these young guys, Alex Starr, AJ DiBonsa, Trey Johnson, Keyshawn George, Will Riley, Bub Carrington. I'm not giving up on Bilal Coulibaly. Like, there's a lot of good young players here that are deserving of opportunities. And I think that comes down to the number one question with Trey Young. Is Trey Young going to evolve? Is he going to be open to playing off ball like he did in college at Oklahoma, like he started to do next to DeJounte Murray in Atlanta? But this is where it's going to really have to happen, because you got to get AJ DiBonsa pick and roll reps. You have to get him ISO opportunities. Trey Johnson can't just be a guy hitting spot up three pointers. You got to get the ball in his hands. Yeah. Like, you can't have that happen. Keyshawn George looked really awesome to begin last season, and they dropped his minutes each month because they're tanking. So I think with this young roster, I want to know, are the veterans going to actually support the development of the youth, or are they going to take away from the development of these young players? And I think that's your positive note about Chris Middleton, where he is supportive. I think AD, with what he provides defensively, he can be supportive. He's not necessarily a high usage player. My question really comes down to what version of Trae Young.
We've been horrible on defense.
Of course. Yeah. I would hope so. But like, will Trae Young actually be additive for these young guys? And then they sign him to a 4-year contract. I think there's a lot of chaos potential here, is my point. There's a lot of chaos potential with the Wizards. A lot.
I mean, like, I'm not going to lie, KOC. I felt mounting anxiety in my chest as you were running through the potential there. And with Trey in particular, it's like, I didn't like the Trey trade a year ago. I hated the Trey contract over the summer. But as we near the season here, I'm just excited to watch them actually try to compete, because that's how starved we've been for competence in Washington. Again, it's been an entire decade since the Wizards have actually had like a good team. And the other thing that I would say gives me pause and helps me restrain myself from full blown Wizards optimism and like a playoff guarantee. I mean, first of all, making the playoffs in the East, it's going to be pretty difficult when you look at how deep the middle of the Eastern Conference is. But we brought back Brian Keefe as head coach. And I haven't seen very much from Keefe over the last couple of years that tells me he's even an above average coach, like average at best, maybe below average. And so him having to make sense of all this and him having to deliver those messages to Trey, I will be taking a wait and see approach as far as his ability to play that role. But you mentioned Will Riley, Trey Johnson. You were a Trey Johnson believer coming into the draft. Are you still a believer as he enters year two? What do you think?
Without a doubt, I am a believer. I still think, like, last year, you look at how effective he was from the mid-range. You hope that can translate to three-point range this year. His skills as a lead guard, getting to the rim, that's still a question with him, but I have no doubts that he's going to be a flamethrower shooter who can do some stuff off the dribble for you as well. So I'm a big fan of him. And I also think for him, learning from Chris Middleton could be incredibly valuable for him this year for the long term. And I think him and AJ DiBonsa and Keyshawn George, there's a synergy between those guys where I think their strengths and their weaknesses complement each other.
They complement one another very well. Yeah, I agree. And Trey, he's such a natural scorer, Trey Johnson, that is, that I would love to get him more looks than just standing in the corner. To your point earlier, like, he's great scoring off motion in the mid-range and from three. I worry about his defense, and I think maybe he's going to be a sixth man on a winning team and on a contending team one day. That could be his destiny, because you can't play him 35 minutes a game or you're just going to get killed defensively. But he's another guy who he got hurt midway through his rookie year. And so people, when they look at the Wizards, they're just like, okay, it's a mess of young guys. But a lot of these young guys have really bright futures. And if you watch Trey, just the way he moves is super encouraging offensively. He's got a great feel for how to score. And so I think we may see more of that this year. Or we're just going to see Trey Young with like 30% usage and we'll get a hot 35 wins in DC. Who can say what the future holds?
If we do get that, I would say there's a, I don't know, 70% chance we'll get AJ DeBonta's father, Ace DeBonta, going on the Ultimate Dads podcast,
boy.
Hosted by LeVar Ball, Dwayne Wade Sr., and Quentin Brown Sr. We get this weekend, Justin Tatum, Jason Tatum's father, said the Knicks are going to win the East. So okay. That kind of went semi-viral. I think we very well could get Ace DeBonta going on that podcast in January or February saying, my son doesn't get enough touches. Trae Young is taking away from these young guys. AJ should be the rookie of the year front runner by far. Why? How is he behind Boozer and Peterson and Wilson? He's fourth. Not even going to finish in the top three.
I was not familiar with the dad take ecosystem. Maybe I need to lock in. If Ace is delivering that message, believe me, I'll be retweeting.
Episode one, and it already has like some viral moments. I mean, LeVar Ball, pretty
great,
brilliant concept, getting fathers of players on a podcast.
Bring the dads in. Yeah, absolutely. Stir the pot again. I'll be there supporting the DeBonta family if we get there in January and the Wizards are 20 games under 500. Yeah,
that
here we go,
for sure. And you gotta help the youth, because that's what matters most in Washington. So we'll see how that plays out. I also think they could be pretty good if Trey accepts that off ball role. Next up in the entertainment rankings, the Toronto Raptors. Their team obviously right now is a bit incomplete with the Kawhi Leonard deal still in flux. We don't know if it's actually going to happen, but all signs point to it happening. So we're going to assume that Kawhi Leonard will be a Toronto Raptor. They also drafted Allen Graves in the first round. They signed Kyle Anderson. Mm-hmm. They lost Mamu, their sixth man from last year. But this Raptors roster, you look at them overall with Poeltl, their center spot needs some work, but with Barnes and Kawhi and CMB and Graves and RJ Barrett, they have so many lengthy, talented, switchable defensive players at the wing who offer some offense with Kawhi. I think Kawhi, more than anything, is going to solve some of Toronto's holes last year. Their offense last year was 15th in offensive rating last season. They were fifth in defense. They're going to be even better defensively this year. But offensively, 25th in isolation points per possession the Raptors were last season. 15th in offensive rating. What does Kawhi Leonard do? He's a bucket getter. And so this Raptors team, they're not going to slip defensively. He's going to help you close, Andrew.
I mean, I'm in on this year's Raptors. And I'll tell you why. It's not even Kawhi. It's last year's Raptors. They were pretty good all year, but also fairly forgettable throughout the regular season. Like a skippable playoff team is how I would characterize last year's Raptors. Like, don't really need to lock into league pass. I don't need to see Brandon Ingram ISO after ISO in the half court, or RJ Barrett, the roller coaster. Some games he's a shooter, most games he's not. I wasn't signing up for that experience. But watching the Raptors in the first round against the Cavs, Colin Murray-Boyles really opened my eyes, and I became a full-blown Scotty Barnes believer. And I think I wasn't giving him enough credit for the progress he made during last year's regular season, again, because I had just sort of mentally written off the Raptors. But now I'm really excited about the future of Scotty Barnes for the next 4 or 5 years. I think they nailed it with Colin Murray-Boyles. I still worry about the shooting. Granted, yeah, Kawhi, if he ever materializes in Toronto, will help them in the half court, help them close games, help them close tough possessions. I still would like a little bit more shooting on the team, generally speaking. But I think there's enough there where they're one of the teams that we have to kind of keep tabs on all year as a potential sleeper to just outright win the East. So they pass the relevant test, the relevance test, as far as the entertainment rankings. And I also want to see what it looks like with Scotty Barnes as he sort of enters his prime here. And so Kawhi is a little bit incidental to the story as far as I'm concerned, but definitely raises the floor and raises the ceiling. So I'm psyched to see what it turns into.
Yeah, you know, when I look at the rankings now, I'm almost a little bit surprised I don't have Toronto higher, because I love watching this team. They're so exciting to me. I think they have a very bright future with some of the guys on this roster, Scotty Barnes. I'm very bullish on Allen Graves and Colin Murray Boyles. I love both those guys. And I think ultimately, for me, the reason why they rank a little lower is because I don't see much chaos potential here with this team. I think even if Kawhi Leonard, they're just going to be good. Like they're just, I don't think they're necessarily a true contender yet. I still think they need to make one more move to become a true contender. But I also don't think they're going to be bad. Even if Kawhi plays 30 games, I still think this team is going to be very competitive night in, night out. I just don't see much chaos potential, but they're not necessarily a team that, you know, they're not going to lead in national TV games and have the star gravity. And we'll see how the product looks offensively, because to your point with their shooting, Andrew, 26th in three-point attempts last year, 21st in three-point percentage. Does that number get much better? And that's going to be a big question.
That's my concern. Yeah, and also it's like I don't – and RJ Barrett, he has value to them because Kawhi may play 30 games. And so RJ Barrett can be kind of an innings eater during the regular season where they just don't have like a massive hole in the middle of the roster if Kawhi has to sit. But I also don't love watching RJ Barrett play basketball. And so that would be one of the problems with putting them that much higher on this list. Jacoby Walter, Jamal Shedd, like these are guys who are good and they play hard and they're part of the defensive identity for Toronto. Emmanuel Quickley, when Emmanuel Quickley is really hot, like he's a lot of fun to watch. But there are other times where it's like, all right, so you definitely think you're a scorer, but I just don't really like watching you play offense. And Scotty Barnes, not the most polished offensive game at this point. So that's the only reason to be a little bit cautious before putting them in like the top 10 of entertainment rankings is like how many people are really going to want to sign up to watch this team night in and night out. But to the, I will.
That- I would add this point to what you just said, Andrew. The Raptors start Jakob Poeltl at center and Emmanuel Quickley at point guard. What's more important for the Raptors to upgrade, their center or point guard spot?
Ooh, good question. I would say probably the center spot. Although I like Colin Murray Boyles playing a little bit of the five as well. So I don't think that they are like desperate for an upgrade there, but I would definitely upgrade the center spot and then assume that you're going to have the ball in Scotty's hands for the most part offensively, Scotty and Kawhi's hands. Kawhi actually got better in that role with the Clippers over the last several years. And you don't necessarily need a star point guard in order to realize the potential of this roster.
I don't think you do either, in part because of how many other guys, Barnes, Kawhi, RJ, that can handle the ball. Allen Graves, I know he's just a rookie. Like, you're not going in with high expectations, but even him, like, he was a point guard growing up in high school, can handle a bit as a connective piece. Colin Murray Boyles can do the Draymond Green style thing. Like, they have a lot of guys who can handle, so I worry less about Quickley and Shed even, or like Elijah Martin. They signed him to a full-time contract this year. I really like Elijah Martin, but to me, it's that center spot. They have to find somebody better than Poeltl. I think that's the hole in the roster, because as much as I also like CMB playing some small ball five for them, you can't do that for 48
minutes.
You
can't do that all the time. Yes. Yeah,
and so
agree.
That's the spot. They need to upgrade off of, on top of Poeltl, or just get rid of him for somebody better, whatever way you get to do it. That's most important for me, to see the Raptors go from really good team to true contender. I think finding an upgrade there, and that's very possible. I just don't know who the five is out there. There's not a lot of centers that I think are going to be either A, available, or B, that are acquirable for Toronto.
Yeah. I had the same question with Utah, where they're rolling with Yusuf Nurkic. Like, it's going to be hard to take Utah seriously as long as that's their five over the next year or two. But where do you go to find the five of the future? That's why the Lakers had to overpay for Walker Kessler. Nobody's going to be beating down Dallas's door to bring in Daniel Gafford. And does Daniel Gafford change the look of the Raptors all that much if they bring someone like that in? No, the answer is no. Let me put you on the spot, though, since you just asked me a question. Would you like this Toronto team more if they had been able to trade for Derek White a year ago? They were offering, I believe, the pick that became Colin Murray Boyles. So you remove Colin Murray Boyles from the board and add Derek White to the roster. What do you think?
No, I wouldn't. And maybe it's recency bias based off of what Derek White did last year when his shot fell apart. Mm. But it's also just my belief in what Colin Murray Boyles can become. I think in all my years covering the NBA draft, there's been no player worthy of the Draymond Green comparison other than Colin Murray Boyles because of who he is. Wow. On both ends of the floor. Energizer on defense. He is so versatile, so tough. He can play small ball five. He can defend point guards at the point of attack. He can defend all five positions. And then offensively, he's a connector, man. He's a really good passer. He's a really willing screener. We'll see how his shot develops over time, but it looked a hell of a lot better last year than it did in college. And so I think with Colin Murray Boyles, he has this real star role player potential. And star role players are all stars. And I think with Colin Murray Boyles entering year two, that's a guy that I'd want to have on my team, on my side, especially with the way Toronto's building this out with Scotty and Kawhi and CMB and Alan Graves. This is a long, versatile, tough, hard-nosed team. And Kawhi, I don't think, changes that identity at all that made them so lovable in the playoffs last year. I think he only adds to it. And so I'm very, very excited for the Raptors this year. And even though I have them 16th, on the rankings right now, I could see them easily, you know, entering a higher level of Alan Graves. Easily. No doubt about it. I mean, this is my rankings. Like, it is my rankings, but if I'm purely going off of like teams,
tailoring
I'm going
it to your heart.
Yes. If it's purely, man. Exactly. Purely about my heart. Toronto is in the top five for sure. And I just,
you
get
are
10 about,
toes down, president of the CMB fan club. I love it. Look, I think that's an easy question to answer after Derek White's performance in the playoffs last year and just sort of betting against what his future would look like over the next couple of years. And because Colin Murray Boyles is so young and has so much potential on both ends, and especially defense, he's just such a great pair for Scotty Barnes and such a great sidekick. And so I like the idea of adding veterans like Kawhi, but also building like people, adding pieces that you can envision being part of a Scotty Barnes nucleus for years to come. So yes, I too would not take a do-over and try to convince the Celtics a year ago. I mean, the Celtics were the ones who said no to that deal, but I think it worked out in Toronto's favor. And CMB, he's better than you would typically find at the 9th pick, which is part of the story with Toronto. If he projects as a star role player, that's a phenomenal outcome and better than most guys in that spot.
Up next, at number 15, the Dallas Mavericks. I cannot wait to watch the Mavericks this year. Hired Dusty May as their head coach. Best coach in college basketball. Replaces Jason Kidd. They draft Dusty May's player at Michigan, Merez Johnson, Sergio De La Rea. Mm-hmm. They trade for Zachary Risacher and Santi Aldama. They lose Bagley, Middleton, Nembhard, Dwight Powell, and Klay Thompson. Just waived this week. He's going to the Miami Heat. The Mavericks this year. Kyrie Irving is truly the big addition, though, because he's back. Missed all of last season with a torn ACL. Number one question with Matt Dallas, how does Kyrie Irving's return affect Cooper Flagg? What's your initial thought to that question, Andrew?
How does Kyrie's return? Well, my thought is that Kyrie is pretty good playing off the ball and attacking as a secondary creator. So I think he'll be good on the ball, but also to the extent the Mavs want to put the ball in Cooper Flagg's hands, he's kind of an ideal second superstar alongside Cooper Flagg. I have no idea what to expect from Kyrie coming off basically a redshirt season last year in Dallas. And so that's the only thing that gives me pause before getting really excited about this team is like, what version of Kyrie and what phase of his career is he in? Is he still in his prime, or is this sort of like Klay Thompson over the last several years where he looks like Kyrie, but he's just a different player and is not nearly as dynamic as he used to be? But I think stylistically, I'm not concerned about how it looks next to Cooper Flagg. What do you think? Are you?
I'm not concerned either. And I think with Kyrie, his success next to Luka, his success next to LeBron, he's shown he can play with the big jumbo ball handlers. And so in theory, it should work. I think your point about what version of Kyrie do we get? That's a real question. But I think for Cooper specifically, I am very, very happy about the way they're building out this roster. Because you look at last year with Cooper Flagg, his numbers with and without Ryan Nembhard. Nembhard was the purest guard in their rotation last year. Flagg plus Nembhard, the Mavericks had a plus 0.4 net rating, so they were slightly above average. They had a minus 8.1 net rating with Flagg on the floor without Nembhard. And Flagg's true shooting percentage was worse without Nembhard. He scored more with Nembhard on the floor, 24 points per 75 possessions to 21 points per 75 possessions. And so you got a better version of Cooper Flagg and a better product last year for Dallas when he was sharing the floor with a guard and Nembhard. So now you bring in Kyrie Irving. Irving's back. You got younger guys you drafted. Sergio Delarue, I don't imagine he's going to play much, but he's got a longer-term guy. You know, you have these ball handlers to play next to Cooper in the short term and the long term. And I think this Dallas team, with Gafford, hopefully Lively can stay healthy. Santi Aldama's a really good floor spacing forward. PJ Washington, Bres Johnson's going to be an instant impact rookie. Max Christie, Caleb Martin, Najee Marshall. There's a lot of names.
There's good players. Like.
There's a lot of good players, Andrew. That's a lot of good players surrounding Cooper Flagg and Kyrie Irving. So if Cooper Flagg does anything close to what he did at the end of last year when he looked like one of the 15 to 25 best players in basketball to end last year, if that carries over, whoa, Dallas could make a lot of noise. I'll just say that. Not going to contend,
but make
a lot of noise.
They will make noise. I particularly look, if Kyrie's going to be healthy all season and close to what he was a couple years ago, I mean, there's a lot of talent there. How do you think about Cooper Flagg? Would you say he is an initiator or a play finisher? And what should his game look like in his prime?
Both. That's what makes him special. He's both. He's both. He can be a guy who initiates, brings the ball up the floor, creates for you. He can be a guy that you throw him the ball at the elbows or the post or let him face up. He can be a guy that cuts off ball and sets screens and is a connective piece for you. I think Cooper Flagg, part of the magic and what he can become as a star-level player is the fact that he can do both. And I think for Dallas, again, like with the way they're building this out, Kyrie is going to be a really good test of what Cooper Flagg is going to have to be at the peak of his powers in the NBA. Because when you're playing next to Kyrie, he's going to get touches and he's going to be willing to play off ball. Kyrie can do it both ways. And when you draft some of the guys that you did, I think that it shows the vision for this roster long term as a team that has multiple initiators, multiple points of attack. And I think for Cooper Flagg, growing into that is going to be very vital. And I think Kyrie is going to help that a lot.
I agree. And I think last year it was super helpful to have Cooper cast into the initiator creator role basically all season long. Like, obviously starting him at point guard was an experiment that didn't actually go all that well. But I think forcing him to get those reps as the guy who basically, like, the straw that stirred the drink offensively, everything began and ended with Cooper Flagg, was a good thing for his long-term development trajectory. But the numbers you showed with Ryan Nembhard on the court are also important and relevant to, like, what his long-term upside or the best way to play offense with Cooper Flagg will actually be over the long haul. I think having another guard who can shoulder some of that burden will be really good for him. And hopefully it's Kyrie this year. Sounds like you're pretty in on the Mavs. Like, how high do you think they could actually climb in the Western Conference this year? Because I want to believe, but I'm a little worried.
I think their 34.5 over under is ridiculous. I think
hammer
that over. I think they could easily be above 500 team with this roster, with Cooper in year two, Kyrie back. I think Kyrie taking all that time off is advantageous for him. And I think their front court, Gafford, Aldama, Mares Johnson, Lively, there's so many good players there. And I don't know, like, maybe Reese Hoshea, in year three ends up being a solid rotation guy.
Stock in Risa-Shea. No. The Risa-Shea resurrection.
I've never been a believer in Risa-Shea, but I'm just, you know, I'm open to being wrong. Maybe a change of scenery helps him out. Maybe Dusty May. What happened at Michigan with Dusty May? He brings in underachievers, Adai Mara, Merez Johnson, Yaxel Lindenborg, not an underachiever, but he went to a smaller school with UAB, and he puts them together. And in year two at Michigan, they win the national title. After he was at FIU, they go to the Final Four? Like, they go to the Final Four? Are you kidding me? So I think with
you're
Dusty
definitely
May,
drinking the Dusty Kool-Aid. No, well, I hear you.
For Florida Atlantic, I misspoke there. But Florida Atlantic going to the Final Four in 23-24. Like, that's nuts, man.
Yeah, and in terms of what's possible, I think, like, 9-10 area in the Western Conference is going to be a pretty low bar that the Mavs could easily clear this year. Only reason I'm not more optimistic, because I'm all the way in on Cooper. Year two Cooper is going to be fantastic. The second half of his season. What was cool about Cooper is you could see him kind of figuring out the NBA with each passing month. Like, he continued improving every single month he was in Dallas. So what does that look like across a rookie season, a second season where he's going to have more help and they're going to be trying to actually win games? Because, I mean, they were doing some funny business through the second half of the season as far as securing lottery positions. So I think it could get really fun with Cooper Flagg. I love the fit with Kyrie Irving. Some of the other guys down there, I love the Santi Aldama signing, but some of the other guys, they're just like, they're names, but how much do I really believe in Caleb Martin? How much do I really believe in PJ Washington at this point in his career? Daniel Gafford, Najee Marshall. I'm still pretty high on Max Christie, but like, what is the ceiling there? Can he actually start for you? So that's where it's like, let's take a wait and see approach in terms of the actual upside of this roster. But I think the front office has the right idea. Whereas, you know, you want to talk about chaos potential. The last couple of years in Dallas got pretty wild. And I think the front office is taking a patient approach to building around Cooper Flagg and isn't trying to do too much with this year's roster, which is probably healthy when you look at what the next 5 to 10 years could look like.
Klay Thompson was bought out this weekend and he is signing with the Miami Heat. He's gave back about $10 million of his $17.5 million salary, and he's signing a 2-year contract with the Miami Heat worth nearly $13 million. Klay, not quite the same guy, obviously, in his prime of his career, not quite the same guy he was even just a few years back when he left Golden State. But I think from the Miami Heat, this is another important addition for them, considering the need for more shooting. And you add one of the greatest shooters of all time, who now is going to be playing on a team where he's going to be getting a hell of a lot of easy shots playing next to Giannis and this roster in Miami. So I love the signing for the Heat. I think it's a great move for Klay Thompson to potentially extend his career in Miami, a la late career Ray Allen leaving Boston, going to play with LeBron in Miami, and he gets one of the biggest shots ever with the back pedal three off the Chris Bosh offensive rebound. Maybe Klay Thompson now will be in a position to get moments like that in Miami.
Okay, so you love it for Miami. Why do you love it? Do you love it because they had no other alternatives to get any sort of juice on the perimeter? Because it's hard for me to imagine Klay Thompson actually going to Miami and being good. That's why I can't get to loving it.
That is 100% why. That's 100% why this team needs more reliable shooting. I know, if you look at the 3-point percentage rankings, Bobby Portis and Davion Mitchell rank, you know, in the top 25. They're low volume guys.
Low volume. They are who I would call fake good shooters. If you're actually 100%. Counting on them to like stretch defenses and stress defenses, they're just not the guys. It's definitely not Bobby Portis, but even not Davion Mitchell, who's gotten a lot better. But let's be realistic about who he is.
still low volume. Andrew Wiggins is not a high volume elite shooter. You look at even Tim Hardaway Jr. He came off the best season as a sixth man last year in Denver, but he's up and down, very streaky. One year he's on fire, next year not so much. So we'll see what version Miami gets this year. And so I think for the Heat, having Klay Thompson as part of a guy who can be part of your rotation is an additive name. He's Klay Thompson. Even if he's not the 45% flamethrower he was at one point of his career, he's a positive addition. And so
he's a name. People know the name Klay Thompson. Yes. And he was definitely good 5 years ago. I'll put it like this. Look, part of my optimism for Dallas is they're like not signing guys like Klay Thompson under the new regime. Oh. They're going after Santi Aldama and building patiently, drafting Merez. Love to see it. Let's see what the team looks like 3 or 4 years from now as they build that way. Klay, I'm glad he's not in Dallas because he doesn't really fit what the Mavs are trying to do. I want the best for Klay Thompson. I love who he's been on and off the court for the last 15 years. As far as Miami, I don't love adding Klay Thompson because it's a sensible move for Miami. I just don't love the Heat because this is what they're forced to resort to as they search desperately for shooting that might make the offense look less clingy. So I'm fine with the Klay Thompson addition, but this does not fill me with confidence as far as who the Heat are actually going to be if they're counting on Klay to help make the offense more coherent next year. But I hope I'm wrong because I would love that for Klay.
Speaking of teams having to make desperate moves, the Denver Nuggets, they lose Peyton Watson. They officially signed DeMar DeRozan. I got a mailbag comment from...
Another great example.
Yes. Yep. I got a mailbag comment from somebody on Spotify using Dice Emojis as his name. It's just Dice Emojis on Spotify. He says, all this bluster over Peyton Watson is really quite funny. He's not worth $22 million average annual value, but good luck to him. DeRozan will be a good fit for a team that's never had a big scoring punch off the bench. And he says this, Dice Emojis does, after Tom Avastro and I on Thursday were like, DeMar DeRozan doesn't space the floor, doesn't add anything on defense. He's not going to be a great fit next to Jokic in Denver. I still stand by that. I still question what he can add. No doubt, Jokic off the floor, DeRozan, ball in his hands can still help you out a little bit. But I feel like it's a fringe, desperate move that isn't clearly going to fit. I question the fit even next to Jamal Murray. Forget Jokic. Some of the other guys on this roster with DeRozan, he doesn't add defensively to you. Is he helping out Aaron Gordon on the weak side? No. I have some questions about DeRozan. Is there anything to what Dice Emoji is saying, though, Andrew? Is there anything here where you're like, you know what, you're being overly critical?
Well, first and foremost, it's great to hear from Dice Emojis. I like the name. as far as... it's hard for me to get behind the DeRozan signing. It's very similar to the Miami conversation where I understand why they went that direction, but the fact that they're going that direction makes me more skeptical of the future as a general matter, at least the near term in Denver and the near term in Miami. And with DeRozan, he's just so one-dimensional offensively. I don't really see how he fits with what Denver has typically done. Yes, he can score, and they just need some live bodies off the bench. So it's not like the craziest option in the world, but he's bad defensively. And if they're going to be playing him 20, 25 minutes a game, I'm not sure where that leaves their team in the thick of the Western Conference. So I think it's a bad sign that they're forced to resort to this option. But, innings eaters during the regular season, DeMar DeRozan can do that. Does he change the playoff profile of that team at all? Probably not. And that is what Denver has to worry about at this point with Nikola Jokic staring down the barrel of free agency. It's just kind of a sad half measure going for DeMar DeRozan in the midst of all that.
Last thing I want to talk to you about, Andrew, is we spent this last weekend in person together in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
We're there for a trip with some friends, and I have five takes from Chicago that I want to share with you.
Oh, great. Hit me.
It's a great time.
The windy city. Yes. Okay, hit me with number five. Yes.
Never ask a man to take your photo. That's the first one here. We did a group photo, and and two chances, just the guy's hands over the photo. There's hands in the picture.
The thing. let's be clear for the audience. What happened was the man's thumb was slightly over the lens. It wasn't like he was up there with bear claws covering the lens entirely.
Well, that's because we had to tell him. I was shouting out, "Hey, like your hands over the camera."
But that is no. Bit. So and it's really good life advice from you, because that is the sort of thing that a female taking a photo. I mean, women are just better at taking pictures than guys. I'm actually pretty good at taking pictures. I would guess that you're pretty good at taking pictures.
That's because you're sharp tech. You're a tech guy. That's why.
That's right. Well, it's because I have kids, so I have lots of practice taking photos of my kids. But as a general matter, you're better off assuming that a female taking your photo is going to be much better. Whereas men, they may just clumsily have their thumb covering half the lens as they're taking a group photo in the sun. So he couldn't even tell that his thumb was covering the lens. It's great life advice by you. Everybody should live by it.
Number four, where that photo was taken, the architecture boat tour is a must. I thought it was so awesome. The views of the city off of that boat, there's like, I don't know, four or five different boat rides you can take. I don't know. What one did we take? Wendell's, something like that.
I forget.
It began with a W, and it was so nice. It was just, it's unlike any other city. You could go down a river, multiple little, you know, turns and whatnot. I thought it was awesome, the views of the city. I've never experienced any city in that type of way. Have you? And did you have as much fun as I did?
Well, here's the thing with the boat tour. First of all, I sat by myself during the boat tour and listened to the leader of the tour just tell us about Chicago. I had a great time. The windy city. I never realized it was
I didn't hear a word they said. I didn't hear a word they said.
Exactly. A lot of people tuning out the guide. I listened to the guide. The Windy City is called the Windy City because of Chicago politicians, not the Chicago wind. Chicago full of windbags way back when. That's how it got the Windy City moniker. Those sorts of fun facts are what you can look forward to if you actually listen to the guide through a 90-minute architecture tour. The thing is, the architecture in Chicago is phenomenal, number one. So you're getting a front row seat to great architecture if you go on the boat tour. The other thing is, even if you're not interested in architecture, even if you're not interested in listening to a guide, you're going to be on a boat for 90 minutes. And if it's a nice day, being on a boat for 90 minutes is a fantastic experience. So I too wholeheartedly recommend the boat tour for anybody who's visiting the Windy City, which is named for windbag Chicago politicians and not Chicago winds.
Number three. And by the way, growing up in Brockton, Massachusetts, I knew a long time ago that Brockton is a windier city than Chicago, the windy city.
There you go.
Well, I learned that many years ago.
Claim the fame for Brockton. Love to see it.
I'm pretty sure it's the windiest city, like east of the Mississippi or something like that. I don't know exactly. I forget.
Okay.
It was years ago. I didn't look this up this morning, but... Number three, we
went
to
Pequod. I love it.
Pequod's Pizza on Friday. It was my second time going there. I went to the different location before. Now having Pequod's twice and Lou Malnati's two or three times, Lou Malnati's is the place to go in Chicago. It's the better deep dish. It's the best deep dish I've ever had. Pequod's was very good. I liked the taste of the sauce. I was licking the bowl with the meatballs I ordered with my appetizer. You guys are making fun of me. But like the crust at Lou Malnati's is just so far superior. There's some buttery crunch to it that just sets it apart on top of a little bit more cheesy, better balance with the toppings and with the sauce. If you're going to go to Chicago for the first time, I would recommend Lou Malnati's. Are you with me or no?
10 toes down for Colin Murray Boyles, 10 toes down for Lou Malnati's. I'm not with you because I've never had Lou Malnati's, so I can't comment. I loved Pequod's. Pequod's also nationally renowned. However, I do love more cheese on my pizza than I was getting from Pequod's. So if that's what I'm signing up for with Lou Malnati's, I can, without investigation, give Lou Malnati's the edge over Pequod's. I had a great time at Pequod's, though, and a great meal. And so it's very hard for me to give negative reviews to basically any pizza. But I look forward to trying Lou Malnati's next time I'm in Chicago.
You got a sandwich as well, didn't you?
I did. Look, I was there to eat. I went to Chicago to eat, so I did. We got multiple large pizzas. I got a little bonus Italian beef sandwich. Went in Rome, had a great time. The Pequod's Italian beef, I'm only going to give that a 7 out of 10. I think there are better Italian beef sandwiches you can get elsewhere in Chicago, but I still enjoyed it. So it's a positive 7.
Yeah, if you're from Chicago, I'd love to hear your thoughts on best deep dish. I know a lot of people from Chicago say, deep dish is overrated. There's better pizza in Chicago. I'm sure there is. But I do like deep dish here and there. And when you're in Chicago, how can you not? We went to Gibson Steakhouse on Saturday night for our dinner. We got multiple steaks. The steaks were delicious. But I got to tell you, Andrew, I think the best thing we had was the loaded wedge. I thought the loaded wedge was one of the best salads.
Horrible take.
The loaded wedge is one of the best salads I've ever had. It was flavorful. It was unbelievable. Steak is steak. You can cook a great steak. But like that loaded wedge, I don't think you could match that. That was excellent.
The loaded wedge was loaded with all kinds of crap. There's a lot of blue cheese on there. I'm not a blue cheese guy. There's little bacon bits and all sorts. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm not joining you on that island. I ignored the loaded wedge.
The
Caesar was fine. Okay. So KOC goes to a steakhouse, comes back raving about the salad, learns something new every day. I'm glad you enjoyed yourself with a loaded wedge. The loaded wedge was not ranked because I did not touch it as we were sitting at that dinner.
Wow. You didn't. Wow. Last one. This isn't necessarily my take. It kind of is my take, but one of the running bits among our friends is Chicago is a tier two city.
Okay.
I would agree, and I don't mean it as a knock. I just think the tier one cities, there's only two in America, New York and Los Angeles. But I think the tier two cities, Boston, Chicago, Miami, San Diego, San Francisco, I put them in their tier two category. Is that a knock? Is that really a negative saying Chicago's a tier two city?
No, I mean, I think what you're doing is basically the standards for tier one are very high. So really, it's LA and New York and everybody else is a completely different conversation, a different type of city, which I think is a fair distinction to draw. You could even say New York is in tier one by itself. And then there's LA, Chicago, Boston, San Francisco, Washington, DC. I don't know whether you included DC in your second tier, but we belong in the second tier, just for the record. So there are others that have said, look, Chicago used to be a great city, used to be in tier one, but it has slipped in the last 25 years or so. I'll say going to Chicago from the East Coast, it's always very dangerous for me to go to Chicago in the middle of the summer because Chicago in the summer, spend a couple days there and you'll find yourself thinking, why don't I just live here? It is so nice and it's pretty affordable for a city of that size. It's far more affordable than East Coast cities. Everyone is pleasant. There's good food everywhere. The weather is 10 times better in the middle of the summer than you'll find on the East Coast. So I always come away giving Chicago like an A+ in every category on the report card when I visit in the middle of summer. And then if I go in the middle of winter, I basically never go in the middle of winter, which says a lot about the Chicago winters. So I have to keep that in mind as I'm grading Chicago. But yeah, I think it's a phenomenal city. In the way you've broken it down, does make sense, where LA and New York are in a category of their own. Chicago, for most of American history, had been in that top category and is now in a second tier, along with Boston, San Francisco, and others. That is fair. I mean, if you're in Chicago, I think you have to sort of concede that you're not on New York and LA's level.
And I think for me, this trip, I moved it from tier three to tier two. I previously had it in tier three with Dallas, Denver, Las Vegas, Philadelphia, but I rented.
Oh yeah.
I rented a Tesla because I wanted to drive around a little bit and explore and just see what the city feels like and looks like and have flexibility to go for a walk at some of the parks there. And like on Lakeshore Drive, driving north to south there, when you're driving into the city and the lake on your left and driving into the city, it is beautiful. There's some gorgeous views and gorgeous places in Chicago. I like the park I walk through, Osaka Gardens. It's not the name of the park. I think it's Jackson Park, I'm pretty sure what the park's called. But I walked near the Osaka Gardens part, which is also near the Obama Presidential Library, which you also were near at one point. When you guys went for a little walk.
It was fantastic.
It's a beautiful area. Yeah, I loved it. It was very nice.
You can have a great Saturday in a dozen different ways in Chicago.
At the concrete beach. They have the beaches there.
And I walked down to Navy Pier. I had a great time doing all sorts of touristy activities. And anybody who's trying to knock Chicago down to a tier three status with like Seattle, Dallas, Houston, whoever, Chicago's safely in tier two. Anybody who is hating harder
Houston,
than that,
please,
is completely out of pocket.
Chicago is totally different than Houston.
You're getting culture, you're getting good weather, good food, all kinds of attractions in Chicago. Enough so that I'm like, well, maybe I could bear the 6 month long bone-chilling freeze of Chicago winters. I don't think my wife would sign up for that.
How long is the winter in D.C.?
It's like 3.5 months. Okay, so you're like, in Massachusetts. Yeah. Like it's not actually that different for you. Yeah. You could do a Chicago winter if you're surviving Massachusetts winters.
I'll be in Austin next. I've never been to Austin except I landed in Austin before the finals and immediately got an Uber to San Antonio because the flight timing worked better. But I can't wait to visit Austin in September. I've never been to Seattle. I want to go to Seattle as well. I'd love to go to Patriots Seahawks opening night. It got to be a good excuse to go to Seattle for the first time. I've always had an attraction to Seattle ever since I was a kid. Ken Griffey Jr. and then Jimi Hendrix as a teenager. Jimmy made me want to play guitar. I got the poster over my shoulder. Jimmy is so I don't know. I've always wanted to visit Seattle, and I'm trying to do both of them. And Salt Lake City, I know they're not a tier one, tier two, but I was there for less than 24 hours and found it to be stunning and beautiful. I want to go back to SLC a little bit more too. So some cities I haven't been to, there's plenty that I, you know, need to stack up. But what about you? What about you, Andrew? Any cities that you recommend to visit, or what are your favorite cities?
I'm right there with you with Seattle. I grew up fascinated with the Space Needle. I love those Sonics teams with Gary Payton and Sean Kemp. And every time I've been to Seattle, I find myself thinking, I should live here, which is another one that does not pass the wife test because it's raining like 70% of the year in Seattle. So that's a veto right out of the box. Salt Lake City is high on my list. Everyone I know, it's one of those cities where in my early 20s, I probably would have looked around and been like, God, it's so boring here. But as I become more washed as the years pass and get into like hiking and sort of communing with nature is what I'm looking forward to from my trips, I think I would have a phenomenal time in Salt Lake City. And as I talk to other people who are equally washed, they come back raving about Salt Lake City. So it's on my list for sure. Perhaps next summer, you know, we can meet in Salt Lake City. Let's do it. Hey, discuss it on the pod. Or,
yeah, we'll discuss.
KOC tours America. Let's do it.
We'll figure out the next meetup next year. But Andrew, thank you so much for joining me today, man. People can hear you on the GOAT. People can hear you all across Stratechery.
The Stratechery universe.
Sharp Tech, Sharp China. You have your newsletter now as well. You're writing again.
That's right.
Tell the people you're writing again. Your fingers are working.
Indeed, covering geopolitics and tech and basketball during the basketball season on Sharp Text. And for basketball fans, greatestofalltalk.com is where you can subscribe to The GOAT, which I had been hosting with Ben Golliver. Ben went to ESPN, was not able to continue hosting the show. I'm now doing it every week with Adam Mares of the All-NBA show. I've been a fan of Adam's work for quite some time, and we're having a great time podcasting together every week, even in the dead of summer when there's really nothing to talk about. So we're filling the time with different rankings and whatnot, and then it's going to be fun as the season ramps up here. So here we go. Five, you know, August is almost over.
The top five is Africa story. Awesome.
Oh, incredible. Great. Five. Amazing. Adam's five memories from Africa, from touring Africa at 23 years old. Maybe the highlight of the summer on Greatest of All Talk. Yeah. So people can look forward to that, you know?
That alone is reason to sign up to listen. That story alone from Adam on GOAT. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me today, man. Talk to you later.
Always great to see you.
Thank you to Andrew Sharp for joining me on today's episode. Thank you to Emmy and the team for producing today's show. We'll be back again on Thursday. Tom Havisham and I will continue my NBA entertainment rankings. We got some pretty intriguing teams coming up on the list. So looking forward to that with Tom. Have a good week, everybody. Talk to you on Thursday.